This episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite Everyday Running Shoe, which I was lucky enough to head out to Barcelona and see being unveiled at its launch, and to chat to athletes like Sharon Nakidi, who won the New York Marathon a few years ago, who does all of her easy and steady runs in this pair of shoes. And then we've set Jess from the Running Channel a very specific challenge to train for 12 weeks for her fastest, hopefully ever, 10K, which is also back out in Barcelona.
Yeah, she is loving training in this shoe. And I think it's important as well, because we're so lucky we get to test lots of different shoes, but we do know that some people just want that one pair that will do everything. So Jess has been doing her long runs, interval sessions, and she will be tackling the final 10K in the Under Armour Infinite Elite shoes.
Yeah, big focus on endurance and a brand new foam, which provides extra energy return and looks after you on even your longest runs. So if you want to know more, head to the link in the show notes.
Welcome to the Running Channel podcast. With Sarah, I've just had a Nando's and my pants have just popped, Hartley. Andy, I've got a tingle in my bingle because I'm running fast again, badly. And Rick, I'm barely holding it together and about to be struck off the payroll, Kelsey.
Live with a live audience. I mean, first, there's so many things to unpick. I think the first thing that we're going to have to address, luckily for our audio listeners, they'll never have to witness.
No.
Why are you wearing a lab coat?
Well, because you told me I'd be running the shop. And have you seen Open All Hours?
Yeah,
so I bought a shop coat, but nobody's quite got the reference yet. Basically, everybody's been saying, is this the surgery? Mm-hmm. Or what have you been doing to guinea pigs?
Yeah.
Or, you know, are you okay?
A lot of people just haven't asked, and I think that's the
I know you said, have we seen Open All Hours? Have you?
Yeah. Hey, look, he was on a tight budget.
He was on a very tight budget.
£11
And also, why have we let him introduce the podcast?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. But lovely try, mate.
Listen,
we'll go this back to Andy next.
This is a big day. We're at mile 27. You're running the London Marathon this weekend. This is the Running Channel podcast. Should we get into it?
Let's get into it.
Before we do get started, though, it's worth noting that Sarah and I have both got a lovely glass of non-alcoholic wine. You've got an entire bottle of Gavi there next to you.
No, don't just hold up the glass.
I'd just pop round to Tesco around the corner.
And the supermarkets are available.
No, because our friend, Podcast Ben, sent us a crate of wine.
Yeah. Yes, he did. So thanks to Podcast Ben, if you're regular listeners, that's what everyone's drinking.
But I found multiple crates of wine, except there was just one issue with it.
Didn't have any alcohol in it.
So we just upped the game a little bit, didn't we?
But Sarah's not drinking because you've got a marathon in 3 days' time. How are you feeling?
We are recording this Thursday. The marathon is Sunday. I've been better. I'm not going to lie. I think it's slowly starting to dawn on me that I actually have to run 26.2 miles. And what's slightly disconcerting is that for the last 2 days, quite often the first thing people say to me are, wow, I've seen your training. And I'm like, what about the training? Was it okay? Am I going to do it? Is that all right? Can I run a marathon?
But I think that I've said this to you as well, but in a really positive way. Like, I have seen the training. I know you put it out there for everyone to see, and that is a difficult thing about doing a challenge for the Running Channel.
Yeah.
Like, it's extra pressure that you'd probably rather not have. And then thousands of people seeing stuff on Strava. So they are like, oh, this is what... So they can take a guess at what kind of shape you're in, and you're worried about what shape you might be in.
It's also, I've never done a marathon in the UK before, which is madness considering this is like the fifth one. But I quite like the, you train for it, then you like go off somewhere, you do the marathon, and then you come back and you can talk about it. This is like, oh, I'll see you there. Yeah. Oh, okay.
No, you're right. You're completely right. Sarah, I was in the hot tub thinking about you this morning.
Come on. A phrase that should never be uttered on this podcast again.
I hate you so much. I was not, mate. I was thinking about anything else.
And I was thinking, I think you're now at the stage where you're worrying about it unnecessarily because you are so prepped for this. You followed a routine the whole way through.
Yeah.
You have not had any major injuries. You feel good. You're in good shape.
Gosh, touch wood, Rick.
What are you trying to do, mate?
I feel like you're ready to go.
Yeah, I am ready to go. Yeah, we should talk about that. I sat down. I'm wearing a lovely pair of trousers, and as I sat down, they did come undone.
Yeah.
So that's a good stage. The carb loading going very, very, very well. But yeah, no, I do feel ready. I'm very excited. But the weirdest thing is, I have tapered before, but I feel like you just so quickly forget about the taper. And so, like, I haven't... This is what I'm most excited about. I haven't worn my race day shoes now for maybe, like, 3 or 4 weeks, and they are sat in my flat, just like ready to go. And every day I walk past them. No, it is, because like, I've... Don't tell me that. No. No, it is. So basically, I am racing in the New Balance SC Elite V4s.
Have you got one of those
beautiful
flashy London Marathons?
Yeah, the colourway. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are they legal?
Yeah, they are. They're like
they look
perfectly
gorgeous.
So nice,
literally
so fast.
Gorgeous.
It's what I did my longest run in.
Yeah.
And then, but then for the last few weeks, I've been like, no, save for race day.
So and in a little glass box being protected
from
the world.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been wearing the Rebels instead, which like are so good, but don't have the carbon plate. And I'm so excited to like carbon plate my way through a marathon.
Yeah.
It's going to be so good.
Oh, yeah. See, there you go. You've talked your we don't need to do the pep talk now.
All right.
You've just talked yourself around in the space of about 30 seconds. You've gone from like being really worried.
Yeah,
to,
welcome
I'm
to
so
the taper.
Ready.
I'm all over
yeah.
the place.
Yeah, completely all over the place. But I feel your pain with the weird idea of racing at home versus racing abroad. I appreciate that's a luxury, but when I was competing, I'd be way more nervous. Well, I enjoyed getting on a plane and going and flying somewhere to race because I didn't feel under the same level of scrutiny. Whereas going to a local track race in Watford was way more intimidating because every single person there, I knew them.
To be fair, I've been to Watford, I get that.
Yeah, but also I feel like you must have been in racing situations where you were going in and everyone else was going in being like, I could beat Andy. And like you were going in being like, I hope no one beats me this time.
Well, I'm hoping it was the other way around. but yeah, it's hard being shot at, being the person that everyone else wants to beat.
Yeah.
And it's hard being under the scrutiny of like having someone running with you the whole way, having a camera in your face.
Yeah.
And also.
Yeah, it's a really nice way to run a marathon. Although I've never run a marathon by myself. So now,
Aren't you running with Mo?
Yeah. Yeah, but this is what I mean. Like I've never, when someone says like, how do you run a marathon? I'm like, well, you have a GoPro with you, you take some batteries.
You mean. So you've got
the whole
nothing. You've got nothing.
Filmed.
You've got nothing.
No, so I'll have
Mo. You're not in touch with normal people, are you?
That's the I just like to add the pressure.
Why are you taking with you? What's going to be on you, Sarah? What's physically on you?
So I will have 7 gels.
Yeah.
One as a spare, or if it goes really badly, will be used.
Right.
And then I'll have my phone. I'll have headphones on.
The whole way?
And that's it. Yeah, because I'm taking like bone conducting, so I can hear music and the crowd.
Yeah, you'll want to take those off later, I reckon.
Yeah, no, I think I will, but I think I just want it as like a backup.
I was the other way around, so I had my headphones on for the marathon, but with nothing playing, and I was, I was with Freddie and taking in the surroundings, and then but they were queued up ready, so when I got to 32K, then I played the music.
Yeah, I remember that bit because me and Tom were being like, Andy! You've got nothing. Literally nothing.
I had nothing to give. Well, you and Tom, yeah, you were cheering for me because you were out on the course supporting me.
Yeah.
Rick, on the other hand, he was there to support me.
In the spa?
In Valencia?
Yeah.
Great holiday. Sorry.
So just to confirm, you know, we're 3 days out now. Everyone's got their marathon preparations down. Everyone knows where they're going to go.
Yeah.
Everyone knows where they're going to chip. Where will you be, mate?
Mile 6,
yeah,
hopefully.
And where is that near to?
The south of the river.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Exactly.
Cutty Sark.
Yeah, nice.
There we go. We're in.
Listen, what time will I be coming past there?
what time do you start?
Fake fan.
There's no way you're going to be there, is there?
I reckon I will be. You're staying in my house on Saturday night.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, so that means it's your job to get in there.
So you're
going to
get me up.
Yeah.
Listen, you know, this is mile 27. You know, we are selling merch here, but we're also selling good times. But then I realised when I said that out loud, I thought, actually, we're in Soho. It could be taken the wrong way. But, you know,
right,
not those
anyway,
kind of good times.
I wanted to pick your brain.
Go on.
Because out of the three of us, you're the only person that's run London Marathon.
Which is quite amazing.
Can you remember what time you ran it in?
When did you run it? 1980.
I ran it a couple of years ago, and
a couple being 2017.
Can I remember what time I ran it in?
Yeah,
it was under a day. It was under a day. I got round and I felt great, but I have got some advice for you. Mm-hmm. Think of it as 22 miles. You know why? Because the Blackfriars Tunnel is like this dip between mile 22 and 23. And it's the only place on the course where it feels like you've kind of lost touch with the rest of the world, because it goes really dark. There are no supporters. You can hear your own feet. There's an echo and you're just with yourself for a little bit. And then you come out and you see the light and it just feels like, you know, the second coming. And you are reaching stardom. You are reaching the end. You're getting to that goal. And it's just like that little jig, that little bit of extra energy that really got me through. Having that moment of dullness and then to come into the light. So I would reach for mile 22.
Right. Okay. I don't know what to do with that.
That was quite a lot more profound than you thought.
I was like so almost inspired and then you lost me. But no, okay,
mile
that
22,
sounds good.
The Blackfriars Tunnel.
So would you say the tunnel bit is one of the worst bits?
No, I thought that was one of the best bits, actually.
Okay, and the worst bit, because that's what I want to know. I don't want to know, you know, Tower Bridge, great. The end, great. Where's the bad bit?
I would say I thought it was the halfway mark for me, because you just go past Tower Bridge and you get into these thin, windy streets. Is it? I can't remember where you are then, but and then you basically
Tower
like
Bridge.
you've had the euphoria of everybody, you know, cheering you on, where it's madness at Tower Bridge, which is amazing, and then you kind of just go into these really thin streets and you're like, okay, right, I'm actually only halfway.
Yeah.
So
I feel like it's quite disconcerting as well to like cross over Tower Bridge and then the finish line is left, but you go right.
Right.
That's annoying.
Yeah. Although there is an out and back that I was telling people about. It's got really good pubs on the left-hand side of it. And there's a tunnel underneath the road where if you've got mates running, this is at mile probably 16 and 21. So you can watch the
roughly. You can't give a 5 mile radius. Oh, sorry, it's in 16.
16 out
side,
and then 21 back. Yeah, yeah. Fine. So you can see people
around 16 to 21 miles.
Yeah, yeah. No, so you can go and watch people going out and then watch them coming back in again.
Oh,
so it's
cool.
A really good spot to watch.
That's what I love. To be fair, I love it. Like when you can see like the elites coming back as well. I don't know if I'll see that. I'm probably not fast enough. But like if they
You're running on the other side, What are your main? What's your main worry right now? Is it finishing?
It might be now after I've just planted that little seed.
I think my main worry is just like going off too fast.
But you're not
going
to do that.
But then my other main worry is going off
too fast. She always goes off too fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Worryingly, I was talking to Mo earlier and he was like, oh, apparently Sarah's pacing me for the first 10K. And I was like,
Who told him that?
That is an absolute disaster.
No, I'm quite good at that now. I'm better than your pacing.
I'll start again.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, mate. How did you feel at mile 20 of your marathon?
Oh, yeah. I definitely didn't go too fast in the first 5K.
Oh, right. Sorry. It was from like kilometer 20 to 25.
20 to 30K. I went way too fast. Yeah.
Where you did the classic. I'm great at this.
I did.
I'm going to smash this marathon.
Yeah, marathons are easy.
That's just Andy all over Sarah, though, isn't it? It's like, generally you're, nice. And, even though we work together, like if you were sending me an email, it always still, I've worked with you yesterday. I'll wake up, there'll be an email in my inbox. And it'll be, hi, Rick, how are you? Could you do X, Y, Z? And these emails to me always just begin with FFS, which I just think is just so, it's too much.
It's because you've cut all the good bits out of the podcast.
Yeah, edit.
Right, I wanted to pick your brains, Andy, on, one marathon.
Yes, I'm an expert. Come to me.
What would be your tip, having now paced one? Like, where was the moment, if you set off at the right pace, because I'm trying to pace it how you pace yours, where like negative split, but I don't really want to blow up at 20 miles. So reflectively, how would you avoid that?
I went too fast from 20 to 30K. So I had my negative split plan and I was ahead of it.
Yeah.
So that was the problem. I didn't actually stick to my own plan enough. Mm-hmm. And then I also, this is why I keep banging on about the training that you've done, and anyone that's doing any race listening to this, you need to reflect on the stuff that you have done, because that's what gives you the confidence. It's not one session or one run. It's like the weeks and weeks that you've done, and there'll be bad weeks and good weeks, and that's fine. But I hadn't probably done enough training, whereas I know for a fact that you have. And so I'd done enough training to run a steady marathon for me.
Yeah.
But over the course of last year, as you guys were badgering me constantly on the podcast, my goals went from, I'm going to run a marathon in private that no one's ever going to know about.
Yeah.
It was like that for a day.
Yeah, that was. Yeah,
okay. That didn't last very long.
We were like, see you there, holiday.
So then all of a sudden it becomes. Well, Rick did organise a lovely spa the next day, so he did.
Oh, the spa's in Valencia. Great. Why aren't we going back? Are we going back there? No, we're going to Madrid, aren't we?
Malaga. Every time.
Can you see why my emails start the same way?
FFS.
I can't remember what we're talking about.
No.
I just hadn't done enough conditioning for my legs, so I was more ambitious than I was actually able to do. Whereas if I'd stayed steady through that middle portion of the race, or at least stayed on my plan, then I think I'd have been fine. But because I did feel so good, and given my experience over shorter distances, that pace, marathon pace, is slow for me.
Mm.
But it's not slow when you're trying to do it for 42K. So I just over-egged it, thinking I do feel great at halfway, and pushed on 10, 15 seconds a kilometre too fast for that 20 to 30K. And so I didn't actually listen to what I was supposed to do. I got a little bit too excited about how great I felt. So I guess my tip to myself, and hopefully to you, would be next time that I would hold on to that feeling of like, I've got more here until later.
Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted, because like, controversial opinion, the first half of a marathon is quite boring.
Do you think?
Like if you go off at the right pace, which is conservative, I find it, I'm sure London is not going to be like that because of the crowds, but like I find if you're setting off for like the first 10K at a pace that you could comfortably do, but you're in a racing situation, it's a bit like, come on.
I see. So basically, even if like you're as trained as you two are, and you know, always tell people not to go off too fast, because you're in this completely different environment that you've not been in before, that actually the crowds are pushing you to go faster, so you feel like you can go faster.
Yeah, so really it's the crowd's fault if you go
But that's true though, because you can't train with that. You can't train with a crowd. It's like when you were running pro, like did the crowd affect you on how you performed on the day compared to how you train?
Well, I'm sure the Aussie crowd booing you when you trip that guy up.
What was his name? Craig Mottram.
Wasn't it 90,000 people booing you at the same time?
Yeah, the front page of the Sydney Herald, badly called by Pom.
Yeah, how did that?
No, I felt favourite fell by Pom.
Favourite fell by Pom.
Seared into my memory.
Yeah. I've got loads of copies of that.
You got a whole room wallpaper.
Looks great.
And then just to go back to that low point of my life, after that
you've
race,
you're all right, mate. Look, you're sitting next to Sarah and me.
This is what
not quite on the same sofa, you know. Yeah, just keep going there.
I couldn't make it onto the same sofa.
No.
But I remember coming off the track. What's the point?
Sorry, go on.
I don't know.
He's the CEO, by the way.
We haven't got jobs.
FFS.
You've got jobs at the moment.
Right.
Someone's got to do the content.
Oh my goodness.
Who do you think makes you these nice little cards?
Yeah, they are lovely, Sarah.
Thank you.
Mine's blank, but thanks. And then Rick's filled with facts that he's made up on his in his research.
Yeah, 120,000 running on Sunday, probably.
Are we just on finishing on that? What was the point? The crowd. The crowd makes a massive difference if they're not booing you.
Yeah.
Because also linked to that, pressure, which I'm sure, like for us, it's a little bit more elevated maybe, but also for most people running a marathon, you're telling people that you're doing it. Yeah. And it's wonderful now that wherever in the world you're running it, people can track you on an app.
Yeah.
But that's the pressure of that I'm sure loads of people feel when you're in the middle of that racing situation and you know that people are clock watching you. Like I remember in my first marathon, my mum, I opened my phone afterwards and the first text I saw was from my mum being like, why have you stopped?
Because
I had for a little bit, but the tracking app had also gone down. But that's the pressure that you feel. It's not only you out on a course with 50,000 other people. It's also those extra people that are watching you.
Yeah, I was lucky because people had to wait to get a telegram with my results when
I finished.
You
could just catch that pigeon and make sure no one found out.
No, that's a massive thing. And I think no one puts more pressure on you than you put on yourself, regardless of the situation. So whether that's the Olympics or you feeling the pressure of the Running Channel audience or of us as your kind of colleagues that are really invested in the journey, it's no different to someone who's running for a charity or their loved ones at home are tracking them. But there's always this perception as an individual that everybody cares about it so much that you might let someone down or that this might happen. But broadly speaking, no one cares about it as much as you do.
No. It would be crap if you didn't finish.
Hey, maybe next year we sign you up.
Yeah, I think this, you know what's coming here.
I'm all in.
There's a marathon in the autumn, I think. Marathon du Médoc, which is the wine marathon.
Yeah.
Mate, that is right up your
street. We've threatened this for a few years, but there's a bulldozer that comes around the back. Yeah. After 5 hours, not a chance.
I chatted to someone who did it, and apparently, though, like, all the best vineyards are in the first 10 miles.
Oh, really?
So then by 10 miles, you are loving life. And then by 20 miles, bit of a hangover, not loving
life. The post-race podcast would be good.
Yeah, it would be. or non-existent. Anyway, Sarah.
You'd be very quiet.
I was going to go back just to finish on the pressure, is just remembering that no one cares about it more than you. Mm. So, like, take that pressure off yourself and try to enjoy it. And I had to do this with sports psychologist or my coach, and they would say small things that stuck with me. One was, you know, like, this time next week everyone's going to be back watching whatever it might be on TV. Yeah. So that, I know the example, but it was like, oh, next week everyone will just be watching EastEnders again. This was during the Olympics when they were trying to kind of take the pressure off me, because I was worried about people back home maybe watching.
Yeah.
And also the other side of it is that if you're feeling pressure, that's because you've put yourself in a position that you've worked really hard to get to. So you've actually worked really hard to put yourself under that pressure. So you've kind of earned it. So embrace the fact that you wanted this opportunity and you've worked really hard for the opportunity. And Rick's trying to wrap me up at a really poignant moment, I think, actually.
Rick, just embrace the love, man.
Yeah. I think embrace the pressure. And, like,
to add to that as well, like, if anyone is listening to this or watching this and is running a marathon, the key thing that I always hold on to, because I'm not going to lie, last week I was not looking forward to this at all. Like, I dug myself deep into a hole of pressure and of, like, well, I've trained with 3:30 as a pace, so, like, I have to do that. And I think I was saying to Andy earlier this week, I'd gone out on a run, it had gone really well, and in somewhere to get me through, like, the last few reps, I'd said to myself, like, well, if I hit this, I would never have to train for a marathon again, because I'd be so happy with that. And then I think I talked myself into, like, great, this is it. Get this, done, retire. That is it at the end. But actually then I, like, trapped myself back and went, like, no, I really enjoy the training. Like, I enjoy how hard it is. I enjoy putting myself through this. That's my reason for running. A lot of other people's reason for running are to raise money for charity or to go out and prove that they can do that distance for the first time, or to run a time, or to qualify for Boston, or to run a championship time. Like, everyone is running in their own way, and that's enough. Like, you don't need to necessarily hit what you want to hit, but you just need to
completely
I guess, like, have fun, enjoy it, and celebrate that for one day. Like, it's not really, it's the victory lap, everyone
it
calls it,
it,
and
is,
I think people
lap.
Need to, like, hold on to that it's still a victory lap. You still run the same 26.2 miles. The medal looks great as well.
And it's interesting that you've started doing the like, bargaining with yourself, like, making, cutting yourself deals. If I can do this, then this is going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
you should get inside my head in a hard session.
No, but that's normal. So, I think I did the same thing. I think everyone here probably has done that. Like, oh, if I can just get to here, then this will happen. Or if I just, you know, you just cut yourself and start, we've got your back. We're going to be out on the course. Rick's going to be out on the course.
Once.
Maybe once. If you're very lucky and we are rooting for you. So you're listening to the Running Channel podcast. Up next, we've got your questions. But before that, we're going to each cover a couple of news stories.
So, news. Sticking on the theme of marathons, we have to cover the fact that in the last week, we've had Manchester, we've had Boston, we talked about Brighton before.
Yes.
And we need to celebrate that.
Yeah, and celebrate some very special Running Channel team members as well.
Yeah, so it isn't just me, Andy, and Rick.
Who run Manchester?
Tito and Megan.
Tito and Megan, yeah.
Absolutely smashed it. Meg, it was her first.
Yeah, Tito's over there, in fact. I think we're going
to
round of applause.
Tito!
And Tito's been referenced a few times because actually on the podcast, he was the absolute genius who started 1 second behind Sarah.
Genius or evil genius?
in a 10K?
Yeah,
and then you crossed the line together as friends, which meant that Tito ended up a one.
Soon to be enemies.
So clever. So clever.
And there's been a little bit of yo-yoing between Tito and Sarah's personal bests, which are very closely matched. And Tito's just taken the lead ahead of this weekend. So.
Yeah, so going into the Manchester-London Derby, Tito was 10 seconds ahead in his marathon PB. I believe it was 3:49. I can't remember the seconds. Yeah, in Manchester. Yeah, so then he's run Manchester in 3:42. So, ask me what I'm running on Sunday.
3:41.
3:41.
And Boston as well.
Yeah, Boston. Mark from our team, who works on our website, he went out to Boston and absolutely smashed it. Not going to lie, though, we do have to mention how, even though we quite often speak as experts, we do quite often make the same mistakes.
Yes.
And the conversation of Mark, fair play to him, a few weeks out before going to Boston, every day he came into the office and went, so, shoe chat. I'm thinking, and we were like, mate, it's too close.
What are you thinking? Not than you on race day.
Make a decision and stick with
it. Yeah, completely. Yeah.
But whatever he chose, he also got a PB in Boston, despite the hills and the tough course. And it was really hot, right?
So, yeah, super hot.
No one in here is mad enough to have run Manchester and doing London this week, are they? No, good. We picked the right audience.
Oh, yeah.
We've had a few people in today. Anyone done Boston?
Austin. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Yes, Boston.
Woo-hoo. Really? Are you okay?
Sure.
Yeah.
You're going to feel great come Sunday night. That's all I'll say.
And the other bit of news this week, Olympic prize money.
Yeah, did you both look at me because I'm the only one that knows what it's about?
Correct. Over to our Olympic correspondent, Andy.
It's a bit like during Rick's radio career.
You just talked about that in the past tense. What? Is it over?
No, but when you were working in a very specific radio job, every time, like literally every other day, I would listen to you on the radio and they'd be like, over to Rick Kelsey, our royal correspondent. And then the next week, you are our sports correspondent. And then the next week, you're our political correspondent. I'm like,
there was a lot of redundancy around, to be fair.
So for the first time ever this summer in the Olympics, the track and field athletes are going to be paid prize money just for the gold medalists.
Do you know, I kind of just assumed that they were paid, but of course they're not, are they? Because they're paid by the sponsors.
Yeah, and in the World Championships, they are paid. So the medalists all get paid in the World Championships. I think 50,000 for gold and then 30 and then 20 or something like that. It's a lot of money, obviously, but you are the best in the world. Rick's just pouring himself another glass. So they've extended that. World Athletics, not the IOC, are paying prize money for the 40-something gold medalists in track and field. $50,000 just for the gold medalists.
Right.
And that's coming from the pot of money that World Athletics receive from the IOC.
So it's just track and field.
Do you know if other Olympic sports get paid?
I don't think any of them get prize money, in the Olympics, unless they...
Because wasn't it traditionally?
No, like, they don't, because this is the first. That was the news.
Amateur.
Sorry?
In the Olympics, back in the day.
Yeah, it's always been an amateur event, but I think the reality is very few of those sports are amateur anymore. Athletics definitely isn't. Mm. And actually, even World Athletics changed their name. I don't know whether it was for this reason, but the IAAF is what it used to be called, and one of the A's, I'm sure, was amateur. So so it's they're getting $50,000 for first place, but my point, we've been chatting about it in the office, is kind of like, if you win an Olympic gold, you're not the one in that race that's short of cash. I don't think. And there will be some of the less high profile finals in the Olympics and track and field that where those athletes might have a small sponsorship but perhaps don't get living from it. But you know, if you're winning Olympic gold, you've probably also won Diamond League races, and that's $10,000 per race to win that. You've probably got a good kit sponsorship. You're likely to have lottery funding as well.
So you're not the person who needs it.
So I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's a good step.
But imagine
if
you went to the Olympics and they were like, right, so 1, 2, 3, no money, come fourth.
Fourth, you get the cash.
Grand.
Then it'd just be dodgy as hell.
There'd be so much elbowing, waiting at
the line. I want fourth.
No, perhaps I want
fourth. But then it's the same in golfers. Because like, when we went to the Open, one of the golfers was staying, we're kind of friends with one of them, and he's staying near us. And he came to the Open, brought his whole family. He's there for a week. You know, he's hired out a house, flown out to be there. And like, it's cost them thousands of pounds to come. But he missed the cut and he doesn't make a penny. So it's the same in golf, isn't it? If you turn up, you've got your sponsorship.
They do pay pretty deep in golf, though. So like, as in, it's not like just the winner takes
all. Yeah, but if you miss the cut, you get nothing.
Do you know what my mum calls golf?
Go on.
Because my dad plays a lot of golf. She calls it a good walk spoil. Dad is not amused.
So no, that's just my take. It's like it was always a slight bugbear when I was competing that I wasn't in a laned event. So if you were in 800 meters down, there's only ever 8 people in those races at the prize money events. So you're guaranteed prize money because they pay 8 places. Mm. But if you're in the 1500 meters, often there's like 15 guys in my race.
You should have done the 800 then.
Yeah, I would have done if I was fast enough.
If you were just a little bit quicker.
Yeah, I just kept. I started at 100 and just. I was like, nope, not fast enough at that. 200, nope.
Hey, mate, never too late. You're training again.
I would
never too late.
If we could make you a 100 meter sprinter for a year, I would pay to see that.
Could we?
No.
Can you imagine what
he would
look
need
like?
About 10 years in the gym.
I just can't.
Wait. Wait, this is me.
Let's give it.
This is me, absolutely, Jack.
Sorry,
what are you talking about?
Let's give him protein and creatine for a year and see what happens.
Smashing the gym twice a week. What are you talking about?
Anyway, should we speak to these lot?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, question time.
This episode is sponsored by New Balance and their Run Your Way campaign. Now, me and Andy and Rick have been going along to some of New Balance's community workshops in the lead up to the 2024 TCS London Marathon, and it has genuinely been the highlight of my week.
You were really struggling with your mojo before one particular run club, so you'd missed a workout, you'd had to abandon it because you just weren't feeling it, you were too tired, you weren't motivated.
Yeah, all right, it was a bad week. I get it. But yeah, it was in Dublin. It was on a Thursday night. I had only done one run before that, and I knew I had two pretty big runs to do at the weekend, and it was exactly what I needed. Partying around the streets, dancing to music at the traffic lights. I just kept turning to people and going, is this what every run club's like?
Yeah, people from different walks of life, people all running for their own reason, essentially running their way. And that's what the Run Your Way campaign from New Balance is all about, supporting those people, celebrating all of their different reasons for running. So if you'd like to find out more about New Balance's running range, then head to the link in the show notes. We've got a shop and a cafe called Mile 27 in Soho for London Marathon from the Wednesday to the Sunday across the London Marathon week, which is really exciting.
Yep, it's going to be open at different times every single day, and we have got so many fun things packed into these days. Do you want to come along and meet the presenters? Do you want to listen to a live podcast? Do you want to come on a run with us? Do you just want a coffee? Or have you run the marathon and do you want a free gift? All is available to you.
We might also be having a party. So watch this space, head to therunningchannel.com/mile27, and when there are events ready to sign up for, you'll be able to click those links and it'll be first come, first served. We'd love to see you there.
As we all know, Andy Badley is always the last person on the dance floor.
I'm Lisa. I'm from Ukraine, but live in Bracknell. My question probably mainly to Sarah.
Yeah.
Because you're running in a carbon plate shoe, how do you feel, like, what are the main benefits for, you're obviously way above average runner, but let's say for someone who runs just over 4-hour marathon, would they benefit from the carbon plate shoe?
Really good question. I still think of myself as an average runner, but people keep kicking me out of that category. So for me, the main benefits have been, so I'm kind of, my running journey started, my first marathon was like 4:27, and then that marathon I didn't run in a carbon plate, and then ever since then I've been in carbon plate shoes. So that's taken me from like just scraping under 4 hours to where I am now at 3:49 and whatever I get on Sunday. What I love about carbon plates is the training benefit that you get. Like, if you are going out to do your longest run, which for me for this training block was 35 kilometers with 25k at marathon pace, that in a carbon plate shoe,
isn't it? Sorry,
it was so grim.
Sort of giving me PTSD.
I cried. It was awful. That run, I felt actually surprisingly okay. Like, I did have a kind of a bit of a deload week the week after, but actually my legs felt pretty fresh. And that's what I've noticed the most from carbon plates, is that you can recover so much quicker. And then on race day, you really feel the difference in just like the energy return that it gives you. So I don't think they should just be given to the elites. Like, it can make a huge benefit for an average runner. Like, definitely get your feet in a pair, try them out, see how they feel, because they're great. Like, the last marathon I did, I wouldn't recommend this, but I did ski 5 days after running it. And I definitely think if I hadn't been in a carbon plate, that wouldn't have happened.
Really?
And I think I wouldn't recommend it. It was a terrible idea.
What percentage of runners do you think in the London Marathon will be running in carbons?
Oh, this is like half? A Rick Kelsey fact.
I mean,
what do you reckon, half?
More than half, yeah.
More than half?
I was going to say like 80 or 90%.
Really?
But I do think that probably, I think that there is, it's really dependent on the shoe and the way that you run to find the right one that will feel right.
Mm.
And that will feel versatile. Versatility is something I talk about with the shoes. So I ran in the predecessor to the shoe that that Sarah's running in my marathon, to the Supercomp Elite 3. But for the same reason, like, there are super shoes out there that feel super fast at 5K or 10K pace, but feel terrible to run a marathon in. And so finding one that feels like you can run your sort of easy runs in, but also run fast intervals in, is quite difficult. So Sarah's happily found that. And they do make a massive difference to, like, the elites have changed the way they train, because they can now do really hard workouts in the morning and in the evening on the same day, which I couldn't do because my shoes when I was doing that were like this thick in terms of the foam. So it's that combination of the foam and the carbon plate that allows you to recover so much quicker. And I found that was a real change. Like, I've kind of got back into running over the last three or four years as the shoes have had the technology they do now, and sort of been able to build my running back up without having the same aches and pains I had previously, I think, because of that technology.
That's amazing.
Definitely, though, with the carbon plate, don't do all of your runs in it.
Yes.
Because I've seen the amount of people who commute to work, and if they're doing a session, that's fine. Yeah. But like, if you're just doing like a commute plod to work in a carbon plate.
It's a cost commitment, obviously. So you know, if you're at the stage of investing in some, then you're sort of doing yourself a disservice by just having that racing shoe. Like, you should have a regular running shoe as well, ideally.
Yeah. Who else would like to ask a question? Hello.
Oh, yeah, we've got loads of hands now. Fight it out.
Shall I stand up?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Eleanor. I've just moved to London. My question is kind of off the bat of what you said about that run that you had that was awful and you cried. How do you, like, because I've had a lot of those. How do you sort of move on from that and, like, get yourself back in the headspace of the rest of your training and, like, not let it affect, like, your week ahead, I guess?
You come in on a Monday morning and you record the podcast with me and Rick, which lifts you right back up.
And then just hammer it all out. So yeah, so that one in particular, my longest run in training, 35K, because we were filming it, I did it on a Thursday, which felt weird. I don't just spring straight back. Like, if you've watched that video, I proper had a little, like...
Where was that? Was that Milton Keynes?
Yeah, we did it around Milton Keynes. I think
anything to do with it?
No.
Hey, I planned that route for
us. Yeah, Andy plotted out a route with so many cattle grids. It was lovely. Yeah.
And not roundabouts.
No roundabouts, just cattle grids and gates. I think you, personally for me, what I find works is not to just like brush it under the carpet. I need to properly like... I guess go through the five stages of grief a little bit. Through like, oh my gosh, that was so bad. Like, I want to mope for a little bit. If I have a bad run, like me and my boyfriend both run, and if we come home and we've had a bad run, like it's fully accepted that you will just sit on the sofa for a little bit and be like, oh, that was rubbish. And then it's like building it back up and going like, okay, why was that rubbish? That one was probably a little bit rubbish because I was doubting myself because I thought the pace that I was running like was quote unquote not good enough, but it was within the pace band that runner had set me. So I had a hard talking to myself and I was like, that is good enough. If you run a marathon at that pace, you would be over the moon. And then we're lucky as well because it's filmed. It forces me to, I then have to review that video when the edit comes out, and watching that back was great.
therapy.
But then it does force you to like look back over. And then I went back into the like Strava workout and I looked on my Garmin and I was like, actually no, like my heart rate was good. The splits were good. Like that is actually something to
you
be proud of.
You doubt yourself is much better. And health is wealth. You know, as long as you get round. As long as you get round in
someone
one piece,
take the bottle away.
And you haven't got to have an osteotomy at the end, you're fine. You're all good.
Here we go again. Let's go back to Rick.
37 minutes.
Yeah.
But did you have serious knee surgery?
You
should talk about it more.
2022?
Anyway, go through the stages with it, but like just don't beat yourself up because you can't, there is no such thing as a perfect training block for a marathon. It's so long, something's bound to go wrong. So just don't beat yourself up.
Yeah, also doesn't ever hinge on one workout or one run. And what you said, bang on, like if you have a bad race, bad run, never try to make a decision about anything in the aftermath. Like you, because you'll always be like, well, I've known people that would do a serious training workout and have to bin it, you know, even it's quite serious. They might have run 30K and a 32K workout and they're like, oh, I didn't get that right. And then go out again in the evening and try and do it again because they didn't get it right. And I'm like, what are you doing? It's because they're making bad decisions too close after you need to just sit with it for a bit.
Same thing for like, if you're running a marathon, the day of the race is not the time to book another one or not book another one.
No, never.
Like, give yourself a day because if it goes really well and you book another one, like, that could go wrong. And if it goes really badly and you go, like, I'm never doing it again, chances are you probably will. That's what happened to Andy.
Your poor boyfriend, by the way. Love to meet him one day. Who's next?
That is not becoming a recurring joke.
Hey, Sarah, health is well.
I'll give you health. Hello.
Hi there, I'm Ian from Edinburgh.
Hi
there. I know that Sarah maybe has like a mantra that it's like run the mile that you're in. I just wondered if that is the mantra for Sunday. And also, what was Nick's what was Rick's mantra for when he did his PB race? And what was Andy's?
Health as well.
Yeah.
Sarah.
No, I want to hear yours first.
No, you can go first.
Okay, so I
you've got to give Rick time to make it up.
Mine. You know mine. I've told you before.
So I now have two, none of which I've made up myself. I've taken them from social media. First one, run them while you're in. So useful in a marathon because you're going to feel great in mile one, but that doesn't matter. Run it easy. You're going to feel great at halfway like Andy did. Don't do what he did and go off too fast. That's a great one. And then the new one that I've learned in this training block is win or learn. I'm so guilty of like beating myself up if something goes bad, but like if it goes wrong, you're learning. If it goes right, you're winning. Good. There's no failing, there's no losing.
No,
and that's helped me.
Yeah.
Right, go on then. You tell us.
I like the fact you've got two. I've also got two. Slight contradiction in terms.
I'm surprised you didn't know these. I'm surprised you didn't have three. Just because Sarah's got two.
I've got two.
Did you come up with them in the hot tub?
They're slightly problematic.
Whilst thinking about you.
Can you two shut up? The faster you run, the sooner you finish.
That is true. He has told me this before.
Nice and steady wins the race. Yeah, I know they don't work together, but I say them the whole way around every time.
You should get that from
you. Yeah.
Like one
on the front, one on the back.
What would you put on the front though? Would you put like slow and steady wins the race on the front, and then as he zooms off, it just says the faster you run the sooner
you finish? I don't know. We can get him one of each.
Does anyone else have a question? One more in the middle. Hello.
Hi guys. I'm George from Lowestoft, Suffolk.
Living in London. Great. Think about moving there one day.
What I love is that we haven't even had to train you to say where
we're from. Yeah. It was asked explicitly and stuff.
Yeah.
So training for my first marathon earlier this year, I tried to push for an injury and it didn't go too well. How do you employ that self-control when you feel pain starting to come in and like prevent yourself making it worse and having that self-control not to let it get worse, and then you can actually run the marathon in the end.
Do you know what George is asking? We basically talked about that the other day about pain levels.
You tried to ask if it was good medical advice
if you could push through it.
Push through it, yeah. Oh, right. It's hard. It depends on the context, I think. Like if you've got something that you've really built up to, like the marathon itself, and pain comes on during that marathon, then I think most of us would probably push through it to a degree. And that's what happened to me in my marathon. I'd had this serious knee problem for a couple of years, which actually was really well under control. And then I had a very similar experience to Sarah, which was my last long run. We filmed it. We did it on a different day to what I would normally do my long run because we were filming it, same thing. Mm-hmm. And it really threw me off. So actually, maybe I think that's a big factor in it is like...
All right, sorry guys, we're working a Sunday next time.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, I think that's
Tom, Tom's just like, no, we're not.
That's the solution. But obviously then everything's busier and people kind of a bit more in the way and don't want a camera in their face.
Yeah,
but
but
that was the first time on that run because I just maybe hadn't warmed up or there's a bit more standing around, isn't there, getting ready for filming and making sure you got everything right. That then my...
Also, it's our fault. You guys made me put a mic on. You didn't arrive on time.
Well, I mean, it's all of those things, Sarah, yeah. So I'm basically blaming you. But the point was that I felt that on my longest run.
Mm.
And was stopping to stretch off with you guys. You can see that in the video we made about it. And then I felt that much more severely in the race itself at about 16K. But I'd made that conscious decision that as long as it didn't get above a certain threshold of pain, I was just going to keep going because I'd trained for that. And that didn't matter to me then if I had to have a month or 2 months off afterwards. It's very different in the build-up to a race, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I think, like we're saying, one run or one workout doesn't make or break your training plan or your potential to run well, but it can break it actually if you do get injured. So broadly, I'm very conservative and always have been because I suffered from a lot of injuries. So if I was experiencing pain above kind of 4 or 5 out of 10 on a run, and then this is not guaranteed medical advice, this is how I used to approach my runs, then I would back right off. And if the pain didn't reduce, then I would stop and I would walk it in or drive home or whatever. Certainly if it was increasing, I would definitely stop. Whereas if you start at 2, 3, 4 out of 10 pain, and then actually it warms up and it starts to feel better, I think that's different. And then I think it can help you make a sensible decision. But broadly, I would always have it in your mind, this run doesn't, because it can feel very like the longest run you're doing a marathon plan, it feels like I have to do this. But if you do that and don't run for another 8 weeks, then you would have been better off not doing
it. And what about picking it up though? Say like George has a 4 week break and then he's got to come back into it. Does he come back where he left off, or do you go to where he would have been in his training plan?
You've got to build back into it really sensibly. Mm-hmm. So even if you would have been running 100 kilometers a week at the time when you stopped and you haven't run at all for 4 weeks, you can't go back into that. You've got to start with 20 minutes of like walk a minute, run a minute. You've got to almost like baby it. And then once you're really confident, okay, 30 minutes of running's easy, that's fine, no pain at all, then you can ramp back up fairly quickly if you have to, because you're chasing this aggressive goal of a marathon in a few weeks' time. But you can't just go, oh, I've had 4 weeks off, everything feels fine if I do some calf raises, 30K, bang.
Like, yeah.
Off we go. I do think as well, like with injury, the biggest thing is perspective. Like I always think I've been really lucky with injuries that I haven't had too many. I had a lot when I first started running because I did everything wrong. So I had like really bad IT band. Mm. But I always look at the perspective of if I can't run now for 2 weeks, but I can carry on running until I'm 60, 70, 80, that for me is like the win. So I think put it into perspective, like it can feel, especially at the moment, it's like all of the noise is about London Marathon. Everything's building on this. If you're signed up and you're running London, it's like, oh my goodness, this is it. This is the moment. But in the same way that if you're feeling that pressure and you're running it next week, everything's taken down, like people will have moved on. In the same vein, like if you're injured and you can't run it, there'll be another one. Like there'll be other races that you can get as excited about, and like ultimately your health is the most important thing.
Health as well.
Health as well. Yeah. Well, we'd love to take more questions, but Andy's got to put his kids to bed and that can take until start time on Sunday. So thanks so much for being our audience. A little round of applause for yourselves. Thank you. But well, thanks everybody. This has been the Runner Channel podcast.
Yeah. See you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode was brought to you by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite everyday running shoe, which has a focus on both comfort and endurance. So an ultra springy, responsive feel that protects your legs and keeps them feeling fresh, which is what Jess has been putting to the test as she's been training for over the last 12 weeks for taking on her ultimate ever 10K. And she's been focused on consistency. So being able to show up with those fresh legs every day and every week in order to put in the work and the recovery that she needs to do to run her best.
If you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes.